This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Listen to us on KPFK, KPFA, and other Pacifica affiliates, and watch us on Free Speech TV Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. November 14th through 20th is Transgender Awareness Week, coming just the week after Americans elected a man who has made a political career out of attacking minorities and encouraging his supporters to do the same. It's a particularly important week for us to hear voices of dissent. One such voice is that of actor, writer, and comedian D'Lo, based here in Los Angeles, where our program is produced, whose work is a testament to the power of humor and the very real diversity of this nation. D'Lo, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Sonali. Glad to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. So I've known you for many, many years in Southern California. A lot of folks in the sort of progressive political community, activist community in Southern California know of your work. And it's been a very interesting ride. I think I knew you when Bush was president. And we went from Bush to Obama to Trump. In this week after this election has happened, what's going through your mind? How do you place Trump's Electoral College win, maybe we should always sort of put it in those terms, within the context of where America is as a country culturally and politically?
So I think like much of our nation or many of us on the left, I was shocked, you know, and then at the same time, there were some kind of signals that I was remembering. I mean, I grew up in Lancaster, and Lancaster is kind of known to be, you know, at least historically, a very racist kind of hick town. And I'm not saying that I have been a victim to any sort of like physical violence, but it has always kind of been around and thick in the air. And I have definitely heard many things. I was heading to my cousin's house in Bakersfield, and it was right after Trump gave one of his more bigger speeches, I guess. This was end of spring, beginning of summer. And there was a Confederate flag that was like proudly hoisted up on this flagpole on route to my cousin's house. And I had passed that house so many times, like years. And I knew that this was related to this anti-immigrant, anti-Black, anti-Mexican stuff that he was just spewing, you know? And so the fact that he got elected, I was just like, wow, like I knew that we were already unleashing like all these racists that were like just waiting for this moment. But right after the election, there's been so many friends of mine who have been victim to hate crimes. And this is, you know, as somebody who's trans, I understand this to be so much more about race than this is about queerness. And I want to be, you know, the person who's like, it's all intersectional, and you know, there are trans people of color who are also dealing with a lot of this stuff. But like right now, and I can talk about why I believe this, but right now I really feel like this is about whiteness. This is really about white supremacists having their day and their time. And I want to say that I'm not scared, but I am, you know, I am about, I think the climate of just even listening, the climate of just even being in conversations with people are changing, you know. And please ask me to go into as much detail as possible around what I've been like swimming in my own thoughts, but right now,
well,
that's what I say.
So D'Lo, on your website, you describe yourself as a queer, transgender, Tamil, Sri Lankan American, interdisciplinary artist. Mm-hmm. You brought up this issue of intersectionality, and it's true, you certainly challenge many notions of what it means to sort of fit into one category or another. Someone looking at you might not know that you're Sri Lankan, for example, but it's very clear you're a person of color, you're brown,
right.
And how, so let's go into what you were just mentioning, that you know, on the issue of transgender rights, Trump is a really interesting guy. He has sort of said, you know, first of all, he has someone like Caitlyn Jenner backing him. But then he has basically said he doesn't care what bathroom trans folks use. He's said he won't touch Supreme Court decision on gay rights. He's even angered Ted Cruz, who sort of tried to point out to the Republican constituency that cares about such things that Trump doesn't want to go after trans rights. I can't imagine that all of Trump voters also feel that that they should uphold transgender rights. So isn't Trump himself kind of straddling certain dangerous lines?
Well, there's two things here. I think that, so the first one being that if we were going to generalize and call it middle America, our red state friends, I feel like the conversation around queerness and transness has been, you know, like you could be very white, very conservative, and have a queer family member, whether they were gay, lesbian, trans, whatever, and you have to grapple with that. You have to try and find a way to love because these are your people. And yet these very same families might not even come across a person of color, might not even have a colleague, might not even have a, definitely might not have a family member, right, who is of color. So I think that the conversation, and in addition to all of this, I think the conversation that has been put out there as far as like gay marriage and the this trans quote unquote moment that everybody's talking about it as, like, it has been started and maintained by white people, by white queer people, by white gays and lesbians. And I feel like, so that's there. And so maybe Trump is also trying to, you know, I think that maybe that's a straddling, if, you know, for his benefit. I don't know I believe that it is because so much work has been done by white people around queerness, and that they could because they're white. Because I just want to say that there have been many people of color that this is their life, is working on trans people of color and queer people of color's lives. But because it's been governed by white people and they have pushed so far, because it comes down to it being family and familiarity, that he can straddle that line and still get away with it. He could still get away with being racist and whatnot.
So
and
for then, the second, yeah, go ahead.
No, the second thing is that, like, in electing Bannon and Pence, you're still dealing with very, like, anti-LGBT. He's basically, even though he might think that, he's gotten into bed with people who are very much anti-queer, anti-immigrant, anti-black, anti all of this stuff, that it doesn't matter what Trump himself, he's obviously not a man of morals, right? Like, it's not about, like, it's not, like, he's gonna go with what his right hands are going with, because I think he himself knows that he's not competent enough to run this country.
Yeah, so I mean, I think he was a little shocked himself at what happened, because, of course, all the we were shocked, but I think so was he and his campaign. So I mean, here in, say, California, on the coasts, in the cities, in the big cities where diversity might be something we take for granted, we see queerness and transgender communities being part of or going hand in hand with racial justice, women's rights. I mean, to us, this is all part of the same struggle. But you're saying that in other parts of the country, these might be separated because race is this one issue that the United States has never truly properly grappled with as a country. We've sort of done it in bits and pieces here and there, but as a country, we haven't. And then came the election of Obama, and people attributed all sorts of things to Obama about all sorts of things that they assumed he would do. None of it came to pass, though, right, D'Lo? I mean, it's not like like white folks suffered any more economically than the rest of us did.
Right.
So
right.
How do you address these issues in your work? I want to get to your career because, you know, we've had, for example, on our TV screens, a lot more queer actors, a lot more LGBTQ actors and roles for such characters on our TV screens. But are those racially diverse enough?
I think that the main reason why I kept going as hard as I wanted to go, there's actually two ways that you can take your career as a theater artist. One is to sort of go down the grant world and get that money, but then you are kind of pigeonholing yourself into performing in front of an arts-based community or sometimes performing for the choir, right? And I didn't want to do that. I felt like the more into dangerous territory my work landed, the more authentically I was living for myself as an artist. And so a lot of my work has been like touring the university college circuit and, you know, a lot of the times not at the most liberal arts sort of based colleges. These are like very conservative spaces that I'm also entering in. I was sort of in another way pigeonholed to feeling like this was how I was going to survive as an artist. It's just being on tour because Hollywood wasn't ready. And now we're seeing that Hollywood is, you know, a more supple environment to have narratives that are trans and queer. But as you said, we don't have enough trans people of color stories. We obviously don't have people of color stories as much as we still have white stories in the media. But even
and those
that
people of color stories are sadly still very stereotypical, right?
Right,
lazy,
right.
Violent, criminal. You know, just,
right.
Yeah.
More so than not. And there are some really incredible shows that are out there that are trying their hardest. And I feel so good when I see these efforts from like people like Fresh Off the Boat and Blackish and, you know, even Empire or Jane the Virgin and like all of these, like you're seeing Black, Asian, Latino folks. And now I know that there are some shows that are like more South Asian actor heavy. But you know, there's still, you know, like when you look at the ratio, it's still off by a lot. And now what I'm trying to do is kind of do two things in this trans moment, is offer my story as a trans person of color, and also having lived for the majority of my life as someone who is gender nonconforming. And the other part of it is, you know, adding a trans masculine voice, because a lot of the voices out there, and I'm thankful for this, have been around trans femininity, but we haven't seen a lot coming from the trans masculine community.
I think that's a really important point. I mean, people point to Laverne Cox and they point to, you know, so many of these fantastic actresses, but you're right, they're trans women. And maybe, I don't know if that has to do with being able to sort of sexualize them, because, you know, through the hair and the makeup. I don't know what it is, but you're right, there's just not that many trans men actors playing trans men characters on TV.
Right. And you know, I have my own ideas about like why that is, and you know, some of it does have to do with you know, who's closer in the room and who's not, and some of it also is about the gaze, like the male gaze or whatever. But
gaze meaning GAZE or GAYS?
In this particular way, GAZE.
Oh, okay.
But you know, I love that, like, I am part of this wave, and I am so excited and grateful for the fact that almost every trans actor that is out there right now, they are creators. We're talking about like Laverne Cox, Angelica Ross, Jen Richards, Trace Lizette, like all of these people are coming. They're not just like, I'm trans and I'm a woman and this is what's up. Like all of these folks are very like beautifully, like understanding, intelligent, like passionate people who are really trying to contribute to how this conversation goes. And so to know that this wave is being shifted and shaped by people who come with their full hearts and political, social justice driven hearts, like that gives me solace as I further down my path, my career path as well, and try and also contribute in the way that I can.
Right.
So, so yes, it has been mostly trans feminine voices, but I'm so proud that they are these particular type of trans women. I couldn't complain about what's happening.
And so let's talk about the importance of, I mean, we went from talking about this election being about race to looking for racial diversity on television. Let's connect those two issues now. How, I mean, I really feel like sometimes we tend to downplay the importance of pop culture in our lives. But, I mean, that's, for example, one of the way in which people outside the U.S. learn about the U.S. I mean, I grew up as a, you know, I came to this country as an immigrant, but before that, all I knew about the U.S. was from American films and television.
Right.
And even today, we still learn about each other within the United States through what we see on films and television. And so humanizing one another through films and television can go a really long way, much more so,
absolutely,
I think, than rhetoric and platitudes and facts and even TV shows like this one, right?
Right, right. No, absolutely. I've always said that art is the most powerful tool that we have to get a message across to other people, other countries, or whatever. I'm hopeful that, you know, a lot of Hollywood, a lot of the people in the entertainment world are not conservative and are not, you know, are not Republican voting. So we're still going to see that much of our media, and I hope this to be true, but that much of our media won't go backwards. I really believe that we'll still keep pushing forward and keep breaking down walls, because oddly, now there is, the minute that you put money into the equation, then it switches up the game. And right now, people are seeing not just the need, but that there, the need for diversity, but that there is actually, like, people come up financially when you put diverse stories out there. So I'm hoping that as long as we just keep creating stories that come from all different parts of life that aren't cis, heterosexual, white, male, that we will continue to do the work that's needed to get done to change people's mind frames. And I hope that we go on this really hard, like on all levels, like in everything that we do, whether it's the performing arts to what's in TV and film.
So let's talk about where you are at right now, D'Lo. I know that you've been involved in a comedy web series called Private Dick. Where can people find your work? You have your own website. People can follow you on Twitter. If folks wanted to learn more about your work, how would they find out?
Right. Everything is on social media and my website. My handle is DLocoKid. That's DLocoKid. And as my website is dlocokid.com. The series was created by myself and another writer named Mark Alton Brown, who worked as a head writer for Girlfriends and Designing Women. And he came and saw a run of my show last year and wanted to pen something with me. And we created three web-length episodes that together we're calling a backdoor pilot, because it averages out to be about 22 minutes. And we're just putting the final touches on it now, and it'll be online, and we're going to do a crowdfunding campaign after that to create more. But, you know, we're just trying to let everybody see it and see if people like it, and trying to show it to producers and whatnot. But it is still in the vein of what it is that I have always done as an artist, which is about making trans and queer stories at the forefront, trans and queer stories of color at the forefront. As an artist, I'm thinking of ways to create community because it's necessary. I think that now we need to actually be in physical proximity to other people who are like us, not just like viewing things on social media. But in addition to that, we also need to be providing content for people to just kind of start feeling strong again. You know, I think that this is a huge blow to the people on the left, and not just left politics, but just people who are social justice driven, regardless of what party they might have voted for or not voted for. I'm really dedicated right now to creating more spaces for artists to get together, and then for artists to show their work and allow for a space of healing, so that we can do the work that we're gonna need to do if that sprinkle of hope doesn't happen, that Trump screws it up for himself, that, you know, and that we are stuck with him for the next 4 years. So that's where I'm at right now.
How important is it for us to make fun of Donald Trump? You're a comedian. It's almost too easy. I remember the Bush years being like these sort of amazing years for comedians, you know, as a way to sort of make light of the horrific things that were done under his regime. And many fear Trump will be far worse than Bush. But, you know, how would you make fun of him? Got any good jokes yet?
There are, it was so funny because a lot of my jokes were around Hillary for the longest, and I hadn't even written anything about Trump, but he is a joke in and of himself, but I think that right now I haven't gotten to the funny. And for me, it's always about the process. Like Carol Burnett was the person who said, comedy is tragedy plus time. And I think I'm still in the tragedy of the fact that he is our president and soon to be in January. But it's not just what's gonna come out of Trump's mouth. It's what's gonna actually be done by Pence and people like Bannon and whoever else that he has in there that are just complete bigots. Even though Trump has always said horrendous things, I wasn't nearly as threatened by him as I was with who was surrounding him. So I think that it's just gonna be like us sitting in some doo-doo for a while until we get to like start making really smart political satirical jokes.
So the period of mourning still continues. Well,
for me, for sure.
I hear you. Well, Dilo, thank you so much for doing what you do and for spending this time with us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Sonali. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. My guest is Dilo, actor, writer, and comedian. You can find out more about his work at dilokokid.com. If you missed any of that, check our website, risingupwithsonali.com. I'm Sonali Kohatkar, your host. You can also subscribe to our podcast on iTunes.